Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive.
Hi, Jessica.
June.
How do you do?
I do great. I'm so excited for today. Honestly,
it's as if we booked a lunch, like a girl's lunch, and we invited Kate Spencer, who is one of our dearest.
I was going to tease it out a little bit.
I can't. I have to let everyone know.
I was like, I thought we were going to do some chit chat. I thought we were going
to
I'm going to go back to the chit chat. We're very excited about this episode.
But Kate is our friend who is not only like, you know, one of those girls that you're going to text about serums and you're going to text about the latest and the greatest, you know, masks that make you look like you're from Silence of the Lambs, but she's also an accomplished author. She is like an old fashioned Victorian writer, and she was a scribe long before any of us even attempted to put pen to paper.
And you know what? I always saw her as someone who like took writing seriously as its own form, do you know, as its own medium. For the rest of us, like, I mean, I've said this before, but for Casey and I, it was like, oh,
I hate writing.
I don't like it. And also,
it's boring.
I wish I was more attractive so I didn't have to do it.
Me too.
And then you look at Kate, who's got the looks of an angel. I find her very beautiful. And I want to talk about that.
She's got tits that go all night. She's
classic.
There's cheekbones. She has that beautiful hair that doesn't need to be dyed. You know, she was born with it. Maybe it's Maybelline, you know?
And she could pull back on a high bun and do a red lip and be done.
Because she's timeless.
That's what she has. But so I remember seeing her and sort of witnessing her. I've more like sort of borne witness to Kate Spencer from afar. You've had the opportunity to be in the trenches.
I coached her and her not yet husband.
Yes.
So you've had more
kind of one-on-one experiences than I am. As just a witness and an audience member, I saw her taking herself seriously as a writer, sharing about her grief and in such a beautiful way and also being attractive. And that was, that was a lot to witness. Jessica,
you know that.
You know, listen, it's a short life. Almost all of my friends are absolutely stunning.
I'm not talking about traditional beauty. I want somebody who owns. That's what I find to be attractive. I'm not talking about fitting into some traditional mold.
No.
I'm talking about someone who carries themselves like a phoenix. And that is Kate.
And I like the highways and byways of her face. Okay, I do. I just do. I like the features. I just like it all. So yes, we have a conversation coming up. We're going to bring her out in just a minute. Jess, I already spoke to you this morning, which feels crazy because usually I'm just like experiencing you like a fresh pile of snow.
Yeah. Yeah, some of which has been peed on, some of which is new fallen. But our last deep dive, was an intense ride. And I got to get a shout out to the deep divers because we have been inundated with some of the most beautiful. I'm going to save the crying for later, but I feel like I could cry if I just let myself. I'm so moved by the support that I'm getting from strangers who are sharing their stories their tips, what yeah. they went through when they when their pet was ailing, just and not just about pets, they're just their experiences saying, please don't stop talking about the deep stuff and the dark stuff, and thank you, and we're here for it, and we're with you, and we support you. Like, I just am blown away by the gratitude I'm having for every single person that's listening to this right now. You say you feel seen. I fucking see you. I see you and I feel seen.
And I see you too. And just because I will never respond to you.
You don't even respond to me.
I don't respond to Jessica. I don't respond to myself, okay, when I ask things of myself. So please know that just because you're bearing your soul and writing me these unbelievably beautiful things, I do what I have the bandwidth for is to screen grab them and to send them
you
to Jessica.
All of them to me. And I
then
do the
touch
same to you.
Down. And then I'll put a heart on it or an exclamation point.
Or a wow.
Or a wow. Or a wow. I'm able to type wow. But that's me and my relationship to text and email. It has no bearing on how these things are actually like penetrating, because they truly are. And for all of those women and men in all genders who reached out to talk about, you know, their scars, their surgery scars, their traumatic births, you know, all of it. Whew. Sometimes I'm like, I guess we should start the podcast because I don't think we have anything left to talk about.
No, we do.
But then it seems there's a
life
little bit more meat on the
life
bone, as Casey Wilson says. More
life
meat on that bone.
Coming at you.
Yeah.
Hot and fresh. But I, you know, after that podcast, I felt so much lighter.
Me too.
I felt so much lighter and I felt so much less alone. And I just thank you guys. I thank you guys for being there for us. I feel like we have so many new friends, and that is such a, from a year that has been so lonely.
Yes.
What a gift.
What a gift. And much like my close friends, I'm also not responding to these new ones, but
No, doesn't mean you don't love
doesn't
them.
Mean I don't care, you know. It really doesn't, but I am so excited. Now we haven't fully fleshed out who's going to do our introduction to our very special guest.
Okay, well, why don't we could do it together?
Okay, that's fun.
Okay,
I mean, you've already outed her, but I am so excited, deep divers, to share a really fantastic woman. Somebody, okay, let's start there. Someone I always saw as a woman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A woman.
She was never
in
a girl.
World. Nope. That's a
never
woman.
Never a girl.
That's a woman right there.
Yeah.
And she is an author. She wrote The Dead Moms Club. She has, her work has been, you've read her, be it in.
She's been in Rolling
Cosmo,
Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Cosmo,
yes.
Glamour. Every
Esquire.
Place you would want to be Esquire. Every place you'd want to be published, Kate has written for. She just wrote a new book. Ooh. She's going to tell us about it. And
about
I'm already
that.
Seeing the movie. I'm already, now we've aged out of those roles, June, but I'm seeing, but maybe there's a, maybe there's a publisher boss or something that we could throw our hat to the ring for. Or, you know what I mean? Something like that. But I can't wait to hear about the new book. She is a lovely friend, and let's just bring her out.
Kate Spencer. How are you?
Wow. I don't even know where to begin with the introduction, with the chat.
I'm putting you on full view. You just got moved from gallery, my friend,
to
speaker view. So I can really drink you in.
I mean, listen, I want to also add to the introduction that I am a deep diver.
Yes,
not only have I listened to every
episode. You might have been the first.
Yeah.
You might have been the first.
Listen, I have sent so many of those messages because I will, I'll be fiddling and diddling around my house or in the car, and literally every topic is like a Venn diagram of over my heart. Like, we're going to talk about scars. Yes. Traumatic births. Yes. Dead people talking to us. Yes.
Yes. New Hampshire. Wet yes! New Hampshire.
Wet yes. New Hampshire. Yes. Yes. I mean, just dildos and fear of.
Yes.
Also, yes.
Yes.
I want to check in about that today, by the way. I'm so glad you brought that up, Kate.
I was telling your producer I could essentially recite your Dame Products ad. Look, I'm so excited to be here because you are literally in my ears all the time. And I get very annoyed when there's not a new deep dive ready for me. I listened to the Matt McConkie episode twice.
Oh, but that's not, I'm not surprised. You.
God, isn't he a man for the ages?
Just so he's delightful. Really, and then
he's a gentleman.
It was
and
just
a scholar. You
know, so you're doing amazing work. I love your show so much. I really appreciate you. And I'm so happy to be here. I mean, I've literally been like all day telling my husband, like, I got to go record the deep dive. So see you later. Like, I'm no, bragging.
No, Kate, this isn't about your husband. God knows this is not about husbands. In fact, mine just walked into the room and he better get the fuck upstairs. Do you hear me?
But quick.
Get upstairs.
I do feel like husbands are lurking on this podcast.
No, I have been texting him like, hey, listen, it's going to start at 12:30. So please get your sundries and get out. And he's found a way to come down here and try to get a bag of Ruffles potato chips and just
and
go right up the stairs.
And what's interesting about that to me, it's like, I feel like men sometimes like buy into a narrative that we're all just a bunch of hens like clucking around over here. Chit-chatting, you know what I mean?
And talking about them.
Yeah. And yet what's interesting to me is the number of husbands surrounding this podcast who seem to want to listen in to what's going on over here. And I'm like, get your own, sweeties. Like, talk to your own friends. Like, I have to tell you, I feel like they're jealous of the level of, like, intimacy and relationship.
I mean, isn't that always the case with straight white men?
Yes, I think you're right. And it's like, it's sort of, it's masked in this, like, I don't know, like, oh yeah, you guys are just talking and talking and talking, huh? And I'm like, yeah, we are.
Mm-hmm.
We are.
They want in on it. And they
wouldn't
want in on
you
it.
Like to know? Well, here's what I want to start with, Kate.
Okay.
I mean, there's so much we could talk about. We talk about C-sections, talk about birth story. I mean, because I'm actually curious. You're one of the, I don't know why I knew this about you. Why do I know about your C-section so well? But I do. So, and you were one of the few people I was like, oh, I know you went for the, did you have a VBAC the second time?
I did have a VBAC the second time. Yeah.
You did. I knew that too.
Why
I knew
do we
that
know
too.
That?
I don't
I
know.
I
love to tell everybody.
Is
maybe
that
that's why.
I don't know why I know that. But sometimes I'm also like, is it just sort of collective consciousness that's
well,
like
we,
being...
Yeah. The conversation gets passed around
the
too. I feel like
around,
that is kind of the idea of community, especially amongst women, is that, you know, there's always a sharing of information. And if someone doesn't have the information, or at least this is how I am. Again, I am a Cancer Aquarius. So
we should have started there.
I am always putting forth the knowledge and trying to connect with people. In case you're wondering, yes, I do see Heidi Rose Robbins. And it's because June and Casey told me to go many years ago. So that
means it's not telling. It's more like forcing.
It was literally like the person forceful. That changed my life. Is this woman. And Heidi is amazing. And so I know this about myself. Like, I love to share information or find information for people or connect people. So, and sometimes it's a nuisance, but I do think that the information just gets shared. Like, curious.
Right.
We're curious. We pass it around.
Yes.
And tell us, so you had a C-section with the first one.
I had a very traumatic C-section. Yeah. And in brief, what happened was I was giving birth at a birthing center that was attached to a hospital in New York City.
Okay.
I dilated extremely quickly. And as they were filling the tub for me to get in, they did a quick vaginal exam and they realized that my daughter had flipped in labor and become transverse breech. And I was at about 8.5 centimeters dilated.
Oh,
so that's butt first. So she was trying to come out with her
butt. My God. Oh my God.
And I had dilated really quickly and was trying to push. So they were immediately like, we got to cut you open. So then they rushed me to the operating room. I had to get sedated because I was having a panic. Like, I think one of you was talking about like the shakes. I think it was in your C-section. So I had that. My body reaction was so intense. They basically sedated me to the point where I was like blacking out while she was coming out. While I was in the operating room and the recovery room, my bag, my purse was in the like patient waiting room. Someone stole my phone and my wallet. So when after Eleanor, my daughter born. Yeah. So after she had been born at like 1 a.m, I had to text my friend and my wallet and phone were gone.
Oh.
And then, and so then Anthony wasn't allowed to sleep over at the hospital. At 4 a.m, he went to the Apple store because he was so like enraged and on adrenaline.
That's so Anthony.
And then to top it all off, I had, as a result of getting that spinal, I had what's called a spinal headache.
Oh God.
For about a week that never went away. And so I couldn't stand. So for the first week of my daughter's life,
I
had to crawl or just lie flat. And then I had to go back to the hospital and get an epidural with my own blood, which patches up the leaking fluid. So this is all to say that had been my experience with my first birth. So I really wanted to try to have a VBAC without an epidural because I was pretty fucked up from getting that spinal.
No, yes.
I love the idea. I don't like pain. Like I love the idea of not feeling things, but that had kind of messed me up. Being said, you know, my daughters are 10 and a half and 8, and I circle between like not feeling upset about that C-section to actually feeling like deep sorrow and rage. And I have different feelings on it on different days.
I get that.
Okay.
And to find a doctor who's willing to do a regular, I'm saying regular, a delivery, right? A VBAC. What does VBAC stand for? I really don't know.
Oh, that's right. Vaginal birth after cesarean.
Okay. And do a lot of doctors do it, or are some like, I don't want to do that?
I think more are open to it. Mine was actually for it. She was basically like, you know, statistically because I had dilated and all that, you know, there are various reasons, but she was very into the idea and was really supportive of it. But statistically, you know, there's a small statistic where something can go wrong, like anything.
Right. Right.
And I'm very grateful that didn't happen. It was like easy sailing with the second one.
Also, I'm so glad. Also, I think it's horrifying and fascinating that you, as you stepped into motherhood, like literally had your identity stolen from the hospital.
That'd just be good for an article, though, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be like good as have, a little like, detail?
And also to good. Be, it's super specific, like to be untethered to the world without a phone, you know, and without like your things.
And alone. And then your own husband can't be there, right?
He because couldn't stay there.
I do remember going, boy, it's really me and me, you know, like at the end of the day. Like, ain't nobody gonna get that baby out but me. And then I remember being shocked especially when you're breastfeeding, like because I come from such a, you know, independent, we do things 50-50. And then I'm like, wait, what do you mean? Every 2 hours, I'm the one responsible for feeding this baby? Every 2 hours? Mm-hmm. And then when I'm not feeding it, I gotta pump my own milk? This is fucked up. That was a real rough. That was a rough transition for me because
I just wish I had just. But I don't know why I didn't give formula. That was a real misstep on my part. Good. I regret it. Talk about regrets.
Oh, I absolutely regret going as long as I did.
I mean, one of the most like terrible moments I remember getting wheeled into the operating room. I was working at VH1 at the time, so you know I had health insurance through them, and I remember thinking, oh, I get an extra 2 weeks off of maternity leave because I got a C-section. Oh, so like you got like 6 weeks with a vaginal birth, I think, or maybe it was 8, and then an additional 2 weeks if you were recovering from a C-section. That's and that was my thinking, where I was like, well, I get another 2 weeks. And
that's crazy. Kept
me open.
That's crazy.
And it's not reflective of them as a company, but just as our like society, you know, our system as a whole. It's just so fucked up.
Horrible.
That's the soapbox I'm bringing to the table today.
No, believe me, that's the soapbox I'm always on. Like, it's barbaric, to be quite honest. It's barbaric and everybody fails. I don't understand it at all. It's horrible. And we should be able to do so much better. You said this a long time ago, Jessica, but like, we all, probably most of us who've given birth, do need to like process a little bit more around it. There's just sort of once, because the problem is once you've done it, you're now in the next thing, which is taking care of a newborn. So you've gone from this, or at least my experience was when I was pregnant, I felt like the world was kind of taking care of me and happy to see my body and my physical body.
And here's my seat. Please sit down let me throw you a party and let me give you cake and let me, you know.
Like you're celebrated.
Put on cute outfits.
Yeah. I remember once I gave birth, like really mourning being pregnant, like being missing and grieving like that time because it was such a nice time where I felt like, people were there for me. And then in a second, I just think there's very few experiences. I mean, death is another one where you're like, I'm over here. And then I take half a step over this line and I'm forever changed. Forever changed. And it's like, it is a lot to integrate. I mean, my kids are 7 and 5. And I really do feel it took me, honestly, 2 years both times to be like, I'm not even talking about the logistics of balancing whatever work, life, schedules, all of the sort of admin of it all. I mean, my psyche, my sense of consciousness in the world.
Yes.
I had an experience where I think I had PPD after my first daughter was born. And, you know, now we're like, at the time I was so educated about it and I thought I knew what to look out for. Mm-hmm. And now in hindsight, and then during it, I thought I was fine. Mm-hmm. But like, meanwhile, Anthony was running the UCB theater at the time. And he was like, I had hosted a show the year before on Valentine's Day. And he was like, I asked these people to host it, you know, cause we had just had a kid. And I locked myself in the bathroom and cried for an hour. I think there was this feeling of like, all of my identity was being erased because I had had this child.
Yeah.
But I mean, I did so much just hysterical weeping. And in hindsight, I'm floored that I didn't recognize it. And I think still, even when we're like taught all the signs and know what to look for in our partners, if we have one or taught, still you're just like, I guess this is this is it. Mm-hmm. This is the norm.
Right. And you don't have, you know, like when I had my mastectomy, I had, because I went with a doctor who was separate from a hospital system, they had a nurse that came every day to check on me. Mm. And she was the loveliest angel. She was like, you know, in her late 60s, she would show up and some days I would just cry. You know, and she'd check me and say, okay, we're healing good, blah, blah, blah. And it's like other countries, they have these doulas come and show up and check in on the mental health of the mother. And wouldn't that have been nice? Because we were all new moms at a very similar time. So it wasn't like one of us could be the one who's had the 8 kids and can say, this is what's normal. This one is, you know, we were all trying to survive. So I think that was really hard. And a lot of us either didn't have moms who were presently on this earth or they were very far away. And so we didn't have, like, my South Korean neighbors, her mother shows up when they give birth and she does not leave the house for a month. She does not cook, clean, or do anything. All her only job is to lay in her bed and be with her baby. That is it.
Can you
imagine?
No. And actually, I have a lot of like grief and anger around that because I think my mom would have done something like that. Mm-hmm. And so in June, your mom passed away in 2007. It was like 2 months after mine. I remember.
Yes,
I remember.
I, rem- I remember that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so you didn't have your mom around mm-hmm. either. And I have a lot of like, my mom would have done that. I know my grandmother did that for her when I was born. And so there's a lot of like, then there's that kind of shit that comes along with the experience of becoming a parent. Like all the other anger you're dragging in from like, that doesn't necessarily have to do with the kids, but it's like other stuff. Just, you know, you put it in your little suitcase and you just drag it along.
For sure. I mean, I unfortunately, like sometimes I wish my sadness showed up just as that. You know, I got that Scorpio sharpness where a lot of times it shows up as mad. It shows up
I'm not a Scorpio and I fucking get it. That's all it shows up as.
Like, I remember my postpartum experience. Yes, there was like crying and I fell to the ground in the shower and just wept. Like, so believe me, there was that. But mainly it just was fury and anger. I mean, I chased a gentleman down the block.
Who was it?
So there was a guy walking about. Paul and I, this is our old house. And there was a guy who used to walk down the block with these two little white fluffs of dogs. And they'd shit on our lawn. Okay. And now every day to walk out to your car on like a bright sunny day and just be like, fuck, man, like, why is that shit on the lawn again? And it was just it was very upsetting. And so now I had been noticing it for months and I'm pregnant. I'm getting angrier and angrier about it. And then we have the baby and now I'm home and I'm sitting on this giant blue couch and staring out the slats of the blinds every day, like these plantation shutters.
Just waiting for him.
Yeah. And also just like looking at life. Like, and wondering, like, if I would ever be out there with the people again. But I was also waiting to see this man. And one day, I see him. And usually what's interesting about Paul is he is usually pulling me back, you know, in public. Yeah. Like, he's the one who's like, let's not engage. You know, there was one time we were walking out of like, I don't even know, we were at some show downtown and we were walking out of the theater and I saw like these teenagers fighting in an alley and I went running over. And I'm like, I'm going to call the cops, get off him. And Paul was like, we're going to get shot. Like, you don't have to engage in every situation, but that's hard.
I would say you do. You do have
That's hard for me, especially
Definitely
when
engage.
It comes to kids, I do believe actually, like
always engaged.
Yes, but he's usually tempering me and pulling me back. But he was also upset about the shit on the lawn, and so I see it happen. I go, Paul, the guy's out there. The dog's just shit on the lawn. The two of us go running outside.
Who was with the child? Was the child on you?
No. Gus was just asleep, like in a. in a bouncy situation with like five pacifiers in his mouth, I'm sure. And we are running after this man, this older gentleman. And I go, can you please come back here and clean up the shit that your dog's just left on the lawn? And he goes, don't you speak to me that way. And then we Paul and I. And that was a really thrilling moment because it's very rare that he'll meet me.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And yeah, was it was like a very bonding moment in your marriage. That's a resource.
Really
That's what
was.
My therapist would call a resource
it
you can revisit.
It was really a thrill. And all of the rage and the sleep deprivation and the resentments toward each other and all of the kind of feelings, it was actually a wonderful thing that could happen because this guy's like, I'm calling the cops. And I go, I go, call the fucking cops on me. Like, bring him here. And it went from zero to hero in a split second. And it was so satisfying because it was like, I knew we were in the right, you know, and I knew that he wouldn't. And then, by the way, he never walked past our house again.
No, he didn't.
Good. And then he starts to tell Paul, he's like, your wife is crazy. And he starts running away. And Paul starts chasing him down the block. It was truly wild.
I
would
see this as a short film.
Yeah, it's really, really a wild scenario and scratched an itch, you know, because it was like we had to get that anger out.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was like a lot of like bottled anger, and it was a great release, you know, and I don't apologize to that man if he's listening or to those dogs.
No, and you shouldn't.
I won't.
I would love it if he's a deep diver. He sends in his own version of the
can you imagine?
Of the events that transpired
that would be
May
even better.
Of 2014. Yeah.
I just want to switch gears for 2 seconds because I want to hear about how you got brave enough to write and say that what you had to say was worth reading. Because I think that is hard for everybody, but especially for a woman.
Okay, so I will say it actually all kind of connects to grief, because the thing that I remember that started to help me out of my grief after my mom died was reading Twilight about 2 years after she died.
Yes, it was like I became obsessed with Twilight.
I really channeled a lot of depression energy into Twilight. Yep. Totally normal.
Vampire and sex. Okay.
I mean, bear not even. They never, but then I got into Twilight fan fiction, which is where all the fucking is.
All the vampire fucking happens.
Is that, isn't that where 50 Shades of Grey started?
It wasn't is. It and Twilight I read fan it, fiction? Okay. I read it as a fan fiction. It was called Master of the Universe, and I read it in real time as it was coming out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so was it like a zine or something? Like, what is it on the internet first as fan
fiction? It was on fan fiction.
Where can we find it?
Well, I mean, Wattpad is where people, I think, have a lot of fan fiction now, and I was reading fanfiction.net. But like, there's amazing authors that have come out of the fan fiction community, especially Twilight. Like, two of my friends are Christina Lauren, they write together, are like massive New York Times bestsellers, amazing romance writers. Can they write contemporary romance? And so anyway, I read that book, and it was the first, it was in that moment I had this feeling of like, I want to make something that gives, that just does this. It was the escape. Like,
oh, I love that.
That's why I don't have any judgment about any writer's work. Like, there's so much like, this is trash and this is good and blah, blah, blah. And I have zero judgment because I know how hard it is to write anything. And also because what I think is most significant about books and writing and also TV, comedy, movies is what it gives the person, what someone takes away from it, right? Yeah. Like, you have no idea after you make that thing and put it into the world, what it is going to mean to somebody. And I realized then, I was like, I love romance. I love romance and books. It makes me feel so good. I love reading it. I love knowing you're going to get a HEA, happily ever after at the end. Like, I just, that is safe to me and comforting. Yeah. And so I started, became more of a romance reader, but then started just writing. And I've written so many failed book drafts. And finally with this one, I was just like, I have to just finish something. I have to just finish it. So I just that's all I just kept saying was I was working on this. I had this nugget of an idea about like a embarrassing viral moment where two people meet and it looks like it's romantic, but it's actually a disaster. And I just kept writing. And then I wrote like the shittiest, it's all true. Like what Anne Lamott says in the book Bird by Bird, which is about the creative process. It's like, you have to write a shitty first draft.
Always.
And it can just be for you. And it's so true, but it's very hard to remember. But it's literally just like putting one foot in front of the other. So,
we talked a little bit to Casey about this, you know, and how she wrote her book. But I think sometimes for women, you know, who are, we're all over 40, I'm assuming, and there's life is so full and there's so much labor that, you know, our lives require. Like, how do you
put that aside, that time aside?
How do you, I do feel like that creative process, like it really takes time.
So I think a few things are important for me anyway, to just acknowledge about my life, which is that I'm a two-income family and we could survive on my husband's income if I wasn't bringing in money. And so that one frees up space for me to write. I quit my full-time corporate job in 2014. Then I freelanced and wrote my memoir. And then I started my podcast in 2018, which became my full-time job unexpectedly.
Wonderful.
And that's so nice. Now we are, you know, more of a dual income family again, but there have been moments where he was really pulling the weight in terms of bringing in an income. And I think that is a big cushion that a lot of writers have that isn't discussed, that kind of, you know, like
right.
There is financial support that then allows one person to be like, I'm going to write today. Not to say there aren't many people who work full-time and write books consistently. That also is possible, but I just do want to acknowledge that. And then it is really like fucking just finding the time. This week I've been trying to write my next book and just writing 1,000 words a night, and I'm procrastinating and saving it until like 10 o'clock.
Mm. You do it after the kids are in bed.
Normally I don't. Normally, I mean, this whole light, this pandemic has made everything crazy, yeah, but
topsy-turvy.
This week I have been, and I've just been like, and normally that goes against like all my philosophy of like, don't work in bed. Don't do your work at night. You're a morning person. But there's a part of me that's like, you just have to get it done and get the words on paper. The other thing that has been very helpful in terms of like having a partner is who is also a creative person is I will be like, hey, this weekend, mark it off. I'm not here. I've done Palm Springs.
Okay, so you're really traveling.
I like to get out of LA. I went to a very sweet, tiny little inn in Palm Springs where I was like the only single person there, not fucking their brains. Everyone else was on a romantic getaway.
But I like that energy. I like the energy that everyone else is fucking around you.
I wrote
going to bed at 8.
Yeah, I would like eat an edible at 8 o'clock and then just get into my covers. That's where it's like a mental break. And also I go and I just write my fucking brains out. And I will also then consume media while I'm there that kind of inspires me or gets me excited.
Mm. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Like the last time I went away to write, I watched When Harry Met Sally, which is my favorite movie, the heart of everything that I love and want to create. So again, these are all like, or it's like, you know, being home on a Sunday and being like, leave me alone. You are in charge of the kids. I don't want to think of anything. And, you know, because that's also my husband's life with work, we're pretty good at doing that for each other.
But if you don't ask for it, no one's going to offer it. No one's going to go, hey, after they worked a really long week, hey, you mind if I take the kids?
No.
So you could do whatever you want.
Everyone's fried and exhausted. Like it's,
yeah.
And, you know, normally I just incorporate it into part of my work day. So, you know, I produce our podcast and we do a ton of work on it. So that takes up like, I don't know, 25 hours a week and then trying to write the other 15.
And when you write, do you go back and look at what you just wrote the day before? You just keep going.
I try to keep going and just like, right. I tend to also write in chronological order, which is very hard, but I do feel like the first draft to me is like dating the characters and getting to know them. And you're kind of like feeling out and like discovering who people are. This is just my process. Other people outline a 50-page outline and, you know, stick to it. For me, I need to like write to get to know them and the story. And so I feel like that first draft is just like a who knows what the fuck it is. But I will say I have a novel coming out in March and the process of writing it has been so educational and like inspiring to be able to go back and look how something changes because it's so different from when it starts. And I know you've both have written things and created things. And so you've probably
not a novel.
The same idea.
Impressive.
And it's, you can just see, like, I'll look back and I'll be like, oh, that's right. This character, her job was at an art gallery that doesn't exist anymore. Or like, I was going to make this choice and that doesn't happen. And just knowing like you just keep building and building and then fix it. And it's a really, when it's done, it's like a very moving process. When you're in it, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. So let me ask you about romance. So, because it's interesting, I think I'm married to a very romantic person.
Oh, come on. That's really sweet.
Yeah.
I do. And I think I have an interesting like relationship to romance because I think it's hard for me sometimes, but
I'll really appreciate dropping in a day to day, the sort of like love bombs and moments of, you know, like total connection and joy, but on a day to day. And I have, I think, a harder time experiencing like romance.
Is it the expectation? Is it like you, like if you walked into like rose petals on the bed, etc., like that to me, I'm like, ooh, but if it actually happened, would I be like, how do I behave in such a scenario?
Like, I think of when Paul proposed, and I was shocked, angry.
Oh, God help
us. And just, you know, because I didn't know what was happening, and I felt, well, honestly, I felt like he had made a decision that I wasn't a part of, you know, and I was like, where am I in this? And
that's interesting. Yeah. That is kind of part of this whole bullshit
sort of
proposal.
Part of the setup. I found it to be very strange. I had a very bad reaction to it, but then we spent the whole night. So like that initial sort of gesture of it all, I struggled with, but then we spent the whole night up like in bathrooms, the hotel, like talking, and I really got to hear what it meant to him. And you know, he said, he's like, every decision we make from here on out, we do together. I wanted to do this and I wanted, and it was really, it was beautiful. That, but that's what I'm saying. That was beautiful. And that was what romance meant to me. But it wasn't the thing, the sort of gesture of it all.
I mean, the way I experience romance in my actual like intimate partnership with my husband is very different from like why I enjoy reading books with romantic plots.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like I don't, for me, there is like an excitement and a comfort and a way it makes me feel to read romance and romance. Like my book is kind of a romantic comedy fiction, but there is a romance in it. But like I'll read anything that is romantic, and I just, it makes me feel really good. But like, were my husband to like buy me a building, like the Lord just did for the proprietress in the book that I'm reading?
Yeah.
And like, I would be
that, like to know the name of that book.
It's like Angel in a Devil's...
Screenshot it.
I will send it to you. It's Julie Ann Long and is the author, and it's the Palace of Rogues series.
Wonderful.
Like I would be like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why didn't you consult me before you bought this building? This is both of our money. Like that. So the,
well,
the,
Anthony is a chop wood, carry water. If I could say Anthony is, well, oh, and God. I will also say, I'm in love with both of your husbands for different reasons, but also for the similar reason. But Anthony, when we would call him in, because Anthony would play the men. So anytime we'd have a romantic scene.
Oh, God.
I didn't want Lennon to do it all the time because, ugh, Lennon, you know. And then Anthony also would read our scenes and he would go, like for me and Keegan's character, he would go, no dude would ever say that. And I'd be like, what do you mean? He's like, men don't sit down and talk about their feelings like this. It's not true. And I'd be like, yeah, no, but they should. And that's what's sexy. He's like, I disagree. Let me try this. And he would do it in very few words. And ooh, hachi machi. Hachi to the match.
No.
Was that hot?
Oh, and my then God.
We would put it in Keegan's mouth and ooh, ooh, mom. Ooh, mom. Okay. So there is an under, there is a fantasy of what we think we would like, and mm-hmm. then there is true romance.
Here's
which I
what
believe,
I would like. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I think that I have, I just experience it in a different way, but here's what I would like, and I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind the Chanel purse. You know, I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, but yes. These are the gifts that you're getting from our group of girlfriends.
I know.
You're giving each other the purses.
I wouldn't mind like a set of diamond earrings. I wouldn't mind Sure. You know, I want to take, that's where I want Paul to sort of get his mind right. Like, let's take things up a notch. You know,
ask me what you want and I'll get it.
Children, like, it's now time to.
You want a tennis bracelet. You want someone. I don't know what a tennis bracelet is, but I know some women are delivered these things for their birth.
Oh, God, that's a whole other world. Yeah.
It's my push gift.
But I'm starting to feel like I, you know,
you're ready for that.
I'm ready for those
metals.
Yeah.
Precious metals. Precious metals.
Yeah.
Don't you feel like we've now given a lot to our families? And like, I'm ready to be rewarded. To be quite honest.
To get paid. To collect.
Listen.
No,
okay. And I'm not saying I don't want like structural change, systemic power, political, all those things. True.
But you want those rocks.
And I would like all of the gifts, and I would like some designer pieces now. I really would.
That's what Jay-Z's give it to Beyonce. You know what I mean?
Yep, I think that's fair.
June, we are cut from the same cloth. Because I'm, we are.
By the way, I want to say I'm comfortable with texting both of your husbands because I have both of their cell phones at the ready and let them know exactly what they should be doing differently.
I mean, poor Anthony has become, I feel like I've gotten him to realize this about me.
But at a certain point, we need heirlooms. We need to be treated. We've lived this far. We've survived this much. We are giving so much. And it's time to collect.
I love a handmade gift or card or gesture also, I should say.
I love a card.
One time
I get poems.
Of course.
Come on. Jess.
I was just going to say by Dan, and then I realized who I was talking about.
That'd be weird if it was from someone else
who's not a professional poet.
Yeah.
Anthony and I got in like a fight once, and I then went to San Francisco to visit one of my best friends, and I was pregnant, and we were still living in New York, and he FedExed a note to say sorry.
That's my point.
Yeah, it was really thoughtful. Like that was, he's very, a very thoughtful person.
That.
And I feel like I've had to learn how to be aware and thoughtful and not just be like, I need this thing to feed me in this relationship. Like so much of it is having to identify with the other person, you know, what makes them feel that fulfillment.
Guys, I would want to talk to you forever. I do have to bring my dog to chemo.
Oh, God.
I feel like
we just started.
This was really...
I could just go on and on.
I feel like we just started with Kate.
I know, Kate. We're going to have you on again. Here's the deal. I want all the deep divers to know, okay? We are eventually going to run out of our dearest friends. So we're going to have to recycle. They're coming back. They have more to share. Like, I don't want you guys to think you're getting fresh meat every time. You ain't. But just like a restaurant where you know that the chicken piccata is good, okay? We're going to bring her back. And you're going to hear more because we barely scratched the surface on her.
Yes. Well, listen, this was a dream. And I am as a podcaster, I've gotten tired of listening to podcasts, but yours cuts through the noise. No, when you do it for your work, like all of a sudden you're like, I can't sit and listen to more people talking.
Like right.
But we do. We do. So, I mean, well, yours.
That's lovely.
Everybody needs to listen to yours, Forever 35.
It's a real hoot.
It is like a cozy treat. It's exactly what you're saying you want to put out there, Kate. You're putting out there.
Well,
everybody
don't worry,
your book, Dead Moms Club, a memoir about death, grief, and surviving the mother of all losses. And then your new book is called In a New York Minute. Is that
right? That's right. That's right.
Oh, God, that's good. Oh,
thank
God,
you.
That's good.
When can we pre-order that new book?
You can pre-order it now, actually. And it's very helpful to authors when people pre-order.
Doing it right now.
Generating buzz. Done. And you order it from IndieBound, Bookshop, your local independent bookstore. It doesn't need to be just from like one of the big booksellers.
I appreciate
every pre-order. Thank you. And Jessica, you have not escaped coming on my podcast. Don't even think that you're not on the list of people that I'm can't wait to ask when I'm
well. And guess what? I'll be in jolly old England where I can talk about all the things you can get from the pharmacy there.
Oh my God.
It's quite a treat because you know, you don't think they're into that stuff, but they get it all from France.
Oh, yes.
At cost, my friend.
They do. And you know who else does? The Canadians. Canadian pharmacy. Don't overlook a Canadian pharmacy.
European pharmacy.
Wow. I mean, my Instagram still says I'm based in Canada, but I didn't know that.
Oh, I'm glad you're
never going to get out of here. Kate, we love you so much.
Listen, I love you all. I love your show. I learned so much from both of you. Thank you for your vulnerability and your humor. It's the perfect combo. Just a salve.
Thank you, Kate Spencer.
I enjoyed looking at you.
Thank you for the description of my face. That was very
really. It's again the highways and byways. You know, I find it very comforting. It is a happy ending for me. What did you call it?
A happily ever after.
It's a happily ever after.
You're an HEA.
HEA. All right, deep divers. We will see you next week. Have a great week.
Let's go on the deep dive. Let's go on a deep dive. No secrets will we keep. It's June and Jessica going deep. How deep can you go? Oh, really deep. Let's go on a deep dive. Let's go diving deep.
The Deep Dive is produced by Jessica St. Clair, June Diane Raphael, and Earwolf. Our producer is Cody Fisher and sound engineer Jordan Duffy. You can listen to our ad-free and bonus episodes on Stitcher Premium. And for a free one-month trial of Stitcher, use code DEEPDIVE. And remember, the best way to support the show is to rate and review. And a huge thank you to Anne Geddes for her beautiful photo that she allowed us to use for our cover art. Please head over to AnneGeddesBaby.com and download her new app, which is a safe place you can upload and store all of your precious images of your children and share them with friends and family, plus much more. We'll see you next time.